It's time to talk about food. It's time to talk about food with Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. You can find Arthur right here on Robin Hood Radio Live on a Monday morning, rebroadcast during the weekend on the weekend as well. So let's turn things over to Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and I guess happy Columbus Day, or whatever you're calling it these days. You know, Columbus is in great discredit for his interactions, let's call them, with the indigenous people. But we still think, at least, you know, I shouldn't say this, because the younger generation may not, but I still think Columbus Day, Italian food, because Columbus was Italian, even though he sailed for the Spanish, and I never got why Italians revere him so much, but in fact, even in Italy, it is not Indigenous People's Day in Italy. It is Columbus Day today in Italy as well.
Well, there's 16...
He landed, by the way, this week sometime, we don't know when. I mean, supposedly he found the New World in October. But it really became... I'm old enough to remember this, is why I said the younger generation, but I was a food editor for the first 20-whatever years of my life, of my career. And Columbus Day was huge for the food section because the supermarkets and other stores had big promotions on Italian products, Italian foods. I mean, even in the days when there weren't that many Italian, you know, imported Italian products, now there's everything. At least in New York, there's everything. You know, they had sales in the supermarkets. So as a result, the food editor, got more pages to fill, because the way it works in the newspaper business, the more ads there are, the more pages there are to fill with editorial stuff. So I was always prepared for, and I never got the book, as we called it, meaning my section came out on Wednesdays at the Daily News, and also before that when I was at Newsday. That was the day that the supermarkets advertised. That was the food advertising day. And also, in those days, any food coupons that existed and national food advertising that there was also in the newspaper. Later on, it went into the Sunday supplements. But now, you know, certainly in the 70s and 80s, and into the early 90s, we would have huge, 42-page food sections for Columbus Day, which meant I had to be prepared with a lot of editorial matter. So we celebrated Italian food. It was easy. I knew what was coming months ahead, so we could all plan it, unlike some other things in the food world that you can't plan for. So it became an Italian food holiday. And, of course, it was because Italian-Americans adopted it as a day of national pride. And, in fact, Columbus did have a major impact on the world. And there's something called the Columbian Exchange. I don't want to give Columbus full credit for this, but he did open the doors to the interchange between the old world, meaning Europe and Asia and to a degree Africa, and the New World, which was discovered by Columbus, and later by many other explorers, mostly Spanish. I always think of Cortez, who came 20-whatever years later than Columbus. He wasn't even born until, I don't know, I mean, when Columbus discovered America in 1492, I think I looked this up once, Cortez was only 5 or 6 or 7 years old. So his first trips were when he was in his 20s. So he actually is the one I think of as being more behind the Columbian Exchange than Columbus. But what the Columbian Exchange refers to is the interchange of foods, livestock, plants, other animals, some of them not so good for the new environment, and diseases. I mean, part of the reason that Columbus these days is vilified is because he and his men brought diseases which were indigenous people were not immune to, and they killed a lot of people, and they killed a lot of people. So they're in the food world. I always say, when I give lectures on Southern Italian food, and I always point out, by the way, that there is such a thing as Southern Italian food, whereas there really isn't such a thing as Northern Italian food, but that's another subject. But Southern Italian food, because it was pretty much owned or occupied by Spain at the time of these explorations, certainly of Cortez, they had an interchange of foods, and a lot of Southern Italian food is based on New World ingredients that came through what we now call the Columbian Exchange, but in this case it was really Cortez, who conquered Mexico, the Aztecs in Mexico. Speaking of being bad to the indigenous people, I always say Cortez actually didn't bring back these foods to Spain because he stayed behind in Mexico to rape and pillage the people. I think Cortez married the daughter of the Aztec king, something like that. I have to go look that up. It's something I've forgotten from my history. In any case, the foods of southern Italy that we often think of as Italian are, in fact, from Mexico, and before Mexico, Peru. These are places that, like Peru, for instance, the potatoes originally come from Peru, and even and potatoes were not always white. Forget sweet potatoes; that's something else. But potatoes were not always white. They were purple. They were green. They had a lot of colors. And then, interestingly, now the trendy thing is colored potatoes. You can go to the supermarket these days and buy potatoes of different colors. And also, I just want to note, because potatoes are indigenous to Peru and the mountains of Peru, that wherever you go, and potatoes are grown all over the world now, but wherever you go in the world, the best potatoes, the locals will tell you, the best potatoes come from the mountains. This is true in southern Italy. It's true in Idaho. That's an example. A mountainous state is our best state for potatoes. Maine used to be famous for potatoes. I'm not sure anymore that there's that many potatoes grown in Maine, but in the hilly, mountainous parts of cold parts of Maine. Tomatoes are original to Peru, and then they were domesticated by the Mexicans, and we get them via the Mexicans. All kinds of squash. Squash did not exist in the old world. So not only, and I'm going to, in a few minutes, give you my squash recipe that I want to make today, that I made a zillion times, so I know it well. Anyway, squash, a zucchini, even though it has an Italian name, is an American, actually it's North American vegetable, all squashes. And in fact, the indigenous people of New England ate squash. If you remember from your history, squash was used for a lot of things, including food, but also as a fertilizer. And also, and I only learned this a few years ago, there's now here in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Brewery does a pumpkin for the holiday season. They do a pumpkin beer. And I didn't know this, but pumpkins, which is a kind of squash, were and now are fermented to make beer. So, and in fact, I don't really taste squash in the pumpkin beer, but it does have a different taste than the usual lager or pilsner. Anyway, back to these foods. Beans. All beans, except for chickpeas and lentils, which are mentioned in the Bible, and probably black-eyed peas, which come from Africa, except for those three, and fava also, except for those beans, all the other beans, like even cannellini, Italian, we think of bean, comes from the New World. And interestingly, kidney beans, or I should call, not kidney, pinto beans, are in Italy known as messicani. They acknowledge they come from Mexico. What other? Chocolate. It comes from the New World and, of course, used extensively all over the world now. Vanilla. Originally Mexican, used all over the world now. And this is the one that always strikes me. Hot peppers, all peppers come from the New World, sweet and hot. But imagine this. There were no hot peppers in Europe or Asia until sometime in the 1500s. Could be later even. So what would Thai food be like, for instance, or any of the spicy foods of Southeast Asia? What would they be like without chilies, without hot peppers? I don't know. There are other, what do you call them, plant-based seasonings that have heat. For instance, ginger has heat. There's something called a Sichuan peppercorn, which is not a peppercorn. It has heat. Black pepper, of course, has heat. And there are many surprisingly spicy dishes made in Southeast Asia that just have black pepper. I'm probably missing another heat source, but there are some other heat sources. So I think this is, you know, really Columbus Day should be celebrating the exchange of foods. And I think, you know, because I cook Italian, I teach Italian cooking, I write about Italian food, I think the best expression of that, in fact, is Italian food. Not to say, I guess Spanish food, too. Because this is, you know, most of these things in Italy came because of the Spanish. I'll give you an example. In Sicily, there's a small city, a Baroque city, a beautiful city, called Modica, M-O-D-I-C-A. It's in the southeast of Sicily. And Modica is famous for its chocolate. Why? Because they're still making chocolate there the way they learned to make it from the Spanish, who learned to make it from the Mexicans. And in fact, I had some the other day from friends who brought back from friends who were just in Modica, and somebody at the table commented, oh, this tastes a lot like Mexican chocolate. Well, that's because it's processed the same way. Without machinery, the cocoa beans are roasted and then ground on a stone slab with a stone, it's not a mortar, it's more like a rolling pin, until it becomes a paste. But of course, it's still a little granular. So even when they make chocolate bars out of it for candy, it's still a little granular. There's an Italian word for this granulation that I'm forgetting, but I used to know it well. It's because it became a very trendy kind of chocolate, not just from Modica, but made by other by companies elsewhere. In Modica, the big company is called Buon Aiuto. And if you ever see Buon Aiuto chocolate, you might want to try it. I'm not telling you you're going to love it. I know I've served it, and a lot of people think, I'd rather have a Hershey bar. or even better than that.
Acquired taste.
Anyway, I like it myself because it's a little different, and most of it is on the bitter side. And I always say Italian chocolate is sort of unforgiving. It has a hard texture.
The acquired taste.
You really have to, like, whatever. But Modica is still keeping up a tradition that they learned from the Spanish, who learned it from the Mexicans. And this happens a lot. Now, here's, I thought, an interesting overlap. But since, did you tell me earlier that New York State does not officially call it a Columbus Day anymore?
No, New York State does. There's eight states. Wisconsin yesterday became one of the states that recognizes indigenous people. What New York City does, it has an indigenous people's parade along with Columbus Day. Connecticut is thinking about renaming the day Indigenous People's Day. I just don't know why they just don't have Columbus Day, keep it Columbus Day, and then also say
have
it's
another
also,
day for Indigenous People Day.
It's Indigenous People Day. That's exactly
Everybody
right.
Everybody loves a parade. We can have two.
That's exactly right.
But then it wouldn't be difficult.
I think I have a hunch the Indigenous People Day parade is a lot more interesting than the Columbus Day parade, which here in New York City has basically become a political day parade.
A political statement parade.
I'm curious today to see who's marching in it.
Yeah, there's Wisconsin that's that way. Maine, I know, is Indigenous People's Day. New Mexico, Vermont, Minnesota.
Well, here's a food that made its way to the old world that comes from the indigenous people of New England and also South America, but New England too, and it's corn. Corn is a New World ingredient that made it to the Old World and is used in a number of ways in the Old World. But in Italy, I would say, besides being feed for animals, the way it is here in the States, its number one use might be polenta. I mean, polenta is nothing but grits, except maybe a little finer and cooked a little longer. And it's not instant grits, although there is instant polenta. I don't like it very much, but there is such a thing as instant polenta. So polenta is dried corn ground up, just like grits is dried corn ground up. Or cornmeal mush, as it used to be called in the orphanages
right.
of America.
But then we had marketing.
Pardon me?
Then we got marketing? Meaning cornmeal mush, it's like...
Oh, yeah, cornmeal mush. I don't think anybody... I only know it from some... Let's see, was it a... with the little kids.
Oliver?
No. Wait, I'm talking about movies from the 30s with those little kids. Oh, God. Little Rascals.
Right.
Yeah. There's a movie of them, and they're in an orphanage, and they're eating cornmeal mush. And then I think at the end, if I'm remembering, the end of the movie, they get out of the orphanage and blah, 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 and they go somewhere. They're being given breakfast, and it's called something else. But then they look in the bowl, and then they look up and say, cornmeal mush! It's mush. So I love mush myself. In fact, I had some mush yesterday. We went out as a family for brunch. And one of the dishes at this restaurant, really, it's just around the corner from me on Flatbush Avenue. I know the history of this location, and it's interesting, but it's now called Fausto. And I thought this was a great brunch dish. It was very rich for me, but it was a big bowl of polenta topped with braised duck and a poached egg and a little bit of the braising juices from the duck. It's very delicious. But I love polenta, and I like cornmeal mush, and I love grits. And grits, by the way, I always say is an excuse for butter. You know, the grits themselves aren't all that interesting, perhaps, sometimes they are if it's really good grits. They have this nice corny taste. But, you know, they require a lot of butter to really be delicious. And polenta is pretty much the same. If not butter, then the polenta for me is best with some kind of braised meat and gravy, or so-called gravy, Italian style, meaning a tomato-based, quote, gravy. And one of my favorites is braised spare ribs with polenta.
Mm.
But I'm not making that today. Mm. Today I'm making another indigenous ingredient. I'm going to make, oh, by the way, I just want to say, Italian food, there's no such thing as Italian food. There is regional food. There's food from Emilia-Romagna, there's food from Lombardia, there's food from Sicily, Campania, Puglia, Calabria. All the southern regions have a similarity because they were once all under the umbrella of the Kingdom of Naples and the Two Sicilies. Meaning all of it's the Kingdom of Naples included a region that we now consider central Italy, Abruzzo, but it's all the region south of that and including Sicily. But the north was always divided into principalities, papal states, city states, and each one of those had something distinctive about their food. Of course, agriculture supersedes politics, so you can't say, they don't have that and they don't have that, because, you know, and let me just say, in northern Campania, the food is very similar to what it is over the border in Lazio, which is the region of Rome, very similar. Anyway, So back to the South, a lot of squash. And I once wrote about this and got some mail complaining to me that I was telling me I was wrong, that squash is an ingredient used in the North, but not the South. Let me tell you, the South has so many recipes, so many ways of preparing various kinds of squash. It way out squashes the North. And I understand there's wonderful pasta stuff with squash up north and things like that. But in the South, it's poorer in the South. And squash is a very easily grown vegetable. You can put a few seeds out in your backyard, and you have enough squash to last you for months. So I'm going to make today one of my favorite dishes. And in fact, I learned yesterday from my nephew one of his favorite dishes. He just made it the other night. And one of his little girls managed to eat it. The other one rejected it, but give her time. and it's squash. I'm not even going to tell you what it's called. I can just call it pasta and squash. But you cube up the squash. You saute it briefly in olive oil, just to get it going, so to speak. And then I add a broken up sausage. Meaning out of the casings. Let's say for about a half of a butternut. I like butternut squash for this. And I use the long neck part of the squash. Usually that weighs about a pound and a half or so. And chunk that up. The bottom I save for another purpose. Usually my squashes that I see in my market are around 3 pounds. So you end up with a pound and a half to 2 pounds of squash. And it's enough for six people probably. But it holds up well. And you can do more than just pasta with it. So let me just say. So and then I saute the broken up sausage, sweet Italian sausage, with a little garlic. Sometimes I even throw in a little pancetta, but mostly not because I don't want to add extra fat. The flavor is not necessary, and rosemary. And I would say a nice tablespoonful of fresh rosemary, or a little less, even dried rosemary is okay. And cook that until the sausage has lost its raw color. And then add just enough water to cover all the squash. And it's not going to be that much. Just barely cover the squash. And cook this until the squash is soft. And then I like to, with my wooden spoon, the back of my wooden spoon, squash up the squash. Not all together. You can leave some, cubes, but give it some texture, But then also some mashed up squash, and that's the that is your sauce. You may have to adjust. You might want to add hot pepper. If you're a hot person, you might want to use hot sausage instead of sweet sausage. I like it with sweet sausage, and then I could always add the hot pepper later for those who want it. And now that's enough for at least 12 ounces of pasta. What pasta is good with rigatoni, is good with any tubular pasta, actually. I wouldn't use spaghetti or a long pasta with this because it's chunky, and you want the pasta you use to be chunky, too. But what I have done, and I do sometimes still, is I use this as a seasoning for risotto, in which case you want to make your very white risotto, and about halfway through the meaning, you cook your in this case I would use oil instead of butter. Cook the rice for a couple of minutes, the arborio or canaroli rice, in a couple tablespoons of olive oil until I always say 2 minutes is enough. And then you add a little bit of water. You don't need broth for this. I would order. You might want to use white wine if you have an open bottle, or a splash of vermouth. And then add broth a cup at a time, or just enough to cover the rice each time you add. And then stir the rice, and add as it cooks down. Add more broth. And at the end, you're going to add your mixture. I mean, not at the very, very end, but I would say before the rice is completely cooked, add your mixture of sausage and squash. And by the way, it's a good Halloween dish because it's orange.
Perfect.
And you know, it's also a good dish for sukkahs, which started, I guess, last night. Sukkahs is a holiday, the Jewish holiday. We celebrate harvest, among other things. So it's a harvest dish, squash. This is the time of the year for squash.
So
okay. So that's my Italian dish for the day.
And I wonder how many people really, really focus on squash as Italian, you know?
Well, it can be.
I understand.
If you go, this recipe, by the way, is in my book. I think it's in Naples at Table. I'm not sure. I don't think there's a version in the Southern Italian Table, but I'm pretty sure there's one in Naples at Table. This is a very common dish in the south of Italy. And by the way, another pasta, if you can get your hands on it, it's getting harder to find all of a sudden, is I like pasta mista. Pasta mista is at least 3, 4, 5 different shapes in one bag or box. And the point of it is to add variety and interest to an otherwise very, very simple dish. Maybe the squash and sausage isn't as simple as some other things you would eat pasta mista with, but it is relatively. It's one of those dishes that could call for pasta mista. So I've had trouble finding it lately.
Do people just, can't you just make, I thought people, I must be very old. I thought you'd just take a little extra of this, and a little extra. I didn't realize
you
bought
it. Yeah, that too. But the thing is, Neapolitans use this so much that the companies actually package it.
Right.
And for them, it's the little this and that too. Although I know one company, Faella, Faella is so meticulous. They actually dry their different shapes at different temperatures and then mix them together, whereas other companies, they just throw it all in the bag. But yes, if you're an old Italian housewife, I have a friend whose mother did this. They had pasta every day. So at the end of the week, on Friday night, she would break up or at least collect all her little dribs and drabs and put it in a pot together. Then she would make pasta e lenticchie, lentils, pasta and lentils, which is one of my favorite things, too, actually. And the other way was the grocers who had little bits and pieces of pasta at the bottom of their pasta barrels in the days when it was all loose pasta. They would combine it all and sell it as pasta mista.
Right.
And by the way, I still do this. I do save dribs and drabs, but I also like to buy the mixed ones. And also, I use broken spaghetti. If I don't have pasta mista, I use broken spaghetti. But I think this dish with the squash is better with some tubular pasta. Big tubes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Big tubes. That's something one day we're going to talk about. Not today, but just really, there is. Marshall's giving me the wind up.
Yeah, no, we're over time already.
but there are different shapes that are better with different pastas. That's all.
Oh, different, for sure. Different, in fact, yeah, I have a friend, dishes. Maureen Fant, who wrote a whole book on this called, I think it's called Shapes and Sauces, Sauces and Shapes.
Yeah,
if I look at my bookshelf here, I keep it right by my desk, so I can tell you what it's called, Sauces and Shapes.
Okay.
And it's by Maureen Fant and another friend of mine, Oretta Zanini De Vita. And Oretta is a historian of food, a food historian of mainly of Lazio, her native region, which is the region of Rome. And Maureen lives in Rome. She's American, but she lives in Rome. Sauces and Shapes.
Got it.
All right.
Yeah.
All righty. Happy Columbus Day.
We'll do that next week.
Okay.
Never too much Italian food, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Take
and
it.
Have a great Columbus Day, everybody.
You too.
Or indigenous people.
Or indigenous people.
Right.
All right. Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.